More School Sucks is coming up next here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
Hey, everybody. This is Brett, and welcome back to Hour 2 of School Sucks Live for May 31st, 2012. With me tonight is Mandrick.
Yeah, I'm here. It's been a fun show so far. We got one more hour to go.
And Osborne.
Hey, dude. How's it going?
Good.
I'm all rested now from the break. So.
And you're dead sexy.
Ready to go.
It is a good break. 7-8 minutes. But now we're back and we're into hour two.
We had a nice volleyball game. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about enough time for a quick volleyball game in the sand. Sure. Now, a couple of things that I want to go over just about the show. First of all, if you are watching our live video feed and you're annoyed by the fact that these ads just pop in periodically, here's a way around that. And this is a short-term solution. I'm in the process of looking for a long-term solution to this problem. Whenever LRN goes to commercials, which happens about every 12 minutes, just refresh the feed and the Ustream will play an ad right away. And then you can watch the whole segment of us between LRN commercials uninterrupted because Ustream only goes to commercial about every 14 or 15 minutes. So if you just refresh when we have a break, that problem is taken care of. And like I said, I'm looking for a long-term solution to that problem. Another thing, I had a couple callers on the line, accidentally hung up on both of them. One of their names was John. John, if you're listening, give us a call back. I'll bring you right on to the show. But yeah, I hope that we were able to help the first John that we heard from tonight. I know that that's certainly a really difficult situation.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, just to hear, it's not really a type of thing that's, I guess, a normal conversation
right.
You hear just like, oh, from tutor to tutor.
No, because a lot of people aren't really thinking about these things. You know, they're like, how can I get the SAT verbal up to 650? All right, let's go to the phone. Is this John?
No, this is Tim.
Okay, Tim, what can we do for you tonight?
Okay, yeah, you hung up on me there accidentally.
Yep, all right.
Anyways, I'm kind of excited. I'm getting feedback through my telephone.
It sounds a little choppy.
Can you hear us okay?
When I speak, I hear myself back to me.
Okay, well, you sound good to us, so if you think you can motor through it, go ahead.
I'll try.
All right.
I've been listening to you a long time since you first really got started, and I contribute to your show.
Oh, thank you very much for doing that.
I've got a pretty important question here. It's how do we get to the free society?
That is a pretty important question.
That's the question, right?
Tim, this is only a two-hour show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Tim, I'm going to ask you to just take the answer off the air because the phone is really choppy. And in the future, if you can get different signal or call us from Skype, we'd be happy to continue the conversation with you. But even if in the next few minutes while we're covering this topic, if you can get to Skype or another phone, call back in and I'll put you back on, okay?
All right.
All right. Thank you for the call.
So how do we get there?
Yeah. So how do we get to a voluntary society? I brought John on right now, too, but we are going to just have him hold for 1 second. How do we get to a voluntary society? Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think this is something that I really see happening in our lifetime.
I know a lot of people think like, oh, let's do what we're doing with the Free State Project and we'll have it in our lifetime.
I don't see that happening at all.
I'm of the Molyneux persuasion myself that this is a process that's going to take raising children in a proper manner with nonviolence.
And right.
Over the course of generations, the statism will get evolved out.
Yeah.
It's not something we can solve with an election or just the right marketing campaign or
anything.
I mean, like that.
Work on yourself and interact, you know, and help the people you interact with on a daily basis, I guess. You know,
absolutely.
Just by being that person.
But what you can do is you can surround yourself with other people who think that way.
Sure.
And not only will that accelerate the process of propagation throughout the rest of society, but it'll make you freer right now.
Jason,
that's why I think at least the two of us came here to New Hampshire for the Free State Project.
Yeah.
Is to be around other people like us.
Osborne, isn't there something coming up like that?
There's something very much like that.
Yeah.
Pork Fest.
Oh, that's what it is.
June 18th through the 24th, where you can have liberty in your life right now with 1,000 other people who think like us, value nonviolence and human freedom.
It doesn't mean you're going to come here and everyone's going to be your best friend.
Absolutely not.
Certainly not. And I, you know, I've met some of the best people that I've ever met in my life here, but it's like any group of people. I mean, right. Some people you'll really connect with and jive with, and some people you won't.
I mean, people with when you first move to an area where there's all these liberty oriented folks, it really is like, oh my gosh, I want to get to know everybody. But then you soon, you know, once you come down from that high, you start to realize, okay, that's a stepping stone. Like, that's, you know, okay, we're there, but there's more that I want from a relationship than just these ideas.
Well, and I think that, yeah, this is a general answer to Tim's question, just so I hope he finds this satisfactory, is you start with yourself and you work on yourself. And when that self gets to a point, you'll find that you can build meaningful relationships that could grow into networks and stronger communities, stronger families. I don't mean communities in the sense that they're made by the state. I mean people choosing their interactions voluntarily. And that's certainly a lot harder than standing around and chanting end the Fed, but that's the way that it has to happen, and I think it's going to take time. I've had a caller named John on hold for a little bit now. We can bring him into the conversation and see what he has to say about this. And of course, John, whatever you brought up, you're welcome to include that as well. But what do you think about this question? How do we, I don't even like to say how do we achieve, but how does a voluntary society emerge someday? What do you think of that question?
That is a very, very tough question. we have to have such a trust in what the other people are going to do. In a school setting, I think that's a really big big obstacle. When you do have a situation of allowing students to do what they want to do. It's amazing to see how they don't know what to do with that freedom. And so, you know, quite often they will misappropriate it. They'll like choose to do nothing. And then immediately the reaction is in the teaching profession is just to jump right back in and take control again. And so the experiment will be a failure before it's even over.
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't have to worry about it. I think that right now, like, if somebody flipped a switch tomorrow and this world emerged, it would be pretty chaotic pretty quickly because people have been trained to be subordinate to all these types of completely arbitrary, completely mystical and made up forms of authority. So there would be, I think, a lot of helplessness and a lot of uncertainty in society. And there's always these political conversations between the right and the left, like, is there a place for the state here? You know, and like, how much state do we need here? Well, when people are trained this way, there's a role for the state everywhere, you know, to tell people what to do, to take care of people. So I think that the reason why Stefan Molyneux has chosen to focus on, you know, the raising of children, the family. I know Wes Bertrand in his show Complete Liberty is right there too. And I'm not an expert as much as those guys are in either of those areas, but my area of expertise was education. And I said, you know, if we're not talking to people under 30 and we're not addressing this government indoctrination system, it doesn't matter how many feds we end, you know?
Absolutely.
So, John, I want to give you a chance to bring up what you originally called about. So if you can hang with us for just a couple minutes here, we will have more from John in a bit. This is School Sucks Live, 843, join SSP. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. With me tonight, Mandrick and Osborne. We've got John on the phone. We're going to bring him back on in just a minute. But listener named Tim posed an interesting question during the last segment as far as the path to a free society. That was his words. I think we quickly changed that to voluntary society, which is very, I think those are synonymous, we could say, where all interactions are voluntary. There is no coercion. And, you know, we talked about how we all believe that this is a long-term project, a gradual process. Most significant social and philosophical evolutions in the past took generations, if not centuries. We talked about how, well, we didn't talk about it. We kind of hinted at it, and I think we can get into it just a little bit more here before we bring John back on the line. People, when they start to understand the ideas of liberty, they have this tendency to go to the furthest place away from themselves and start there, right? The military-industrial complex, the IRS, the Federal Reserve. Yeah. And that's just a path that results in people feeling extraordinarily small and helpless. And, you know, the Ron Paul campaign always brings, or the last 2 years anyway, brings a bunch of people in and kind of, you know, fills their sails up with wind and then fires a torpedo into the sailboat. And some swim and, you know, maybe they join the Free State Project or they find another way to spread the ideas of liberty. But I think a lot of them retreat and they say, boy, you know, they just framing things in terms of political thinking. They don't really think that there's anything that they can do, and they just kind of have to accept the system as it is. I don't know how common that is. I don't know how many people that happens to, but it's a shame to lose somebody who's, you know, willing to work hard and has, you know, a lot of creativity and intelligence, but they just feel so disappointed by the outcome of these elections that they just can't plug themselves in somewhere else. But the secret to having a free world someday, the fastest way I see it, is proving that Building 7 was a controlled demolition, I would say. What do you guys think of that? That's probably the key?
I quit.
That seems like the opposite of what it's
No?
Called. No.
So I'm wasting my time on YouTube.
I think you are.
Ah! Years of my life.
What you really need to concentrate on is what happens at the Bohemian Grove.
Oh, come on, guys. Ugh.
Owl statue and stuff.
This is more after show.
This is ridiculous. You know it's all about harp.
No, these are things. I mean, like, I have no aversion to any kind of exploration of conspiracies, but I don't think that proving any of these things are going to be revelatory as far as what it means for most people. Right. Like, I think we talked about this on the show before. Who's the guy, the CIA guy, E. Howard Hunt, came out on his deathbed, said, yeah, I have to really, you should know that this JFK thing, that was us.
oh, really?
No one even
wow. noticed.
No one even cared. No. You know, it didn't even, he said something to that effect. And, you know, maybe it was dismissed as it's the ramblings of an old madman. Mm-hmm. But I think context is important. It's important to understand that history is filled with conspiratorial thinking. But hyper-focusing on any of these things is just as useful as fighting the Federal Reserve. Like, you know, saying, oh, I want liberty, so I'll sacrifice my time to fighting one of the most powerful organizations in the world. It's just another way to feel very small. Let's bring John back on. And John, I want to give you a chance to bring up the comment or question you called about. So what do you got for us?
Well, I didn't say, well, actually, I like this conversation better than what I was going to do originally. But I wanted to mention first, sort of dovetailing, you were mentioning Stefan Molyneux. I had the chance to meet him last September at Liberty Fest in New York City.
Oh, yeah, I was there too.
I asked him the question because I told him that you know, I'm a teacher and what would be the most important lesson just in general I could teach kids, and he had the answer very quickly was just logic. You know, give them the tools to get that critical thinking so they can, you know, tear apart the contradictions around themselves and work past that. So from that I actually. And through your show, got really heavily involved in reading up on Trivium education and so on and so forth. So that's really changed a lot of my outlook in the classroom. So thank you for that.
My pleasure. And I strongly agree with what he said. It really is like a lot of the things that happen in school. It's like asking people to build things without the tools. And there's a reason why school works that way and has worked that way in government-run school systems around the world since the very beginning of the 19th century, if not even before in some places that we haven't explored on my show. School is not about equipping people with intellectual self-defense because governments do not benefit from that. Militaries do not benefit from that. Even, you know, corporations that are connected to the state and could not survive without the state do not benefit from that. Unions do not benefit from that. Parents do not always benefit from that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a real vested interest in keeping critical thinking education, the real tools of learning, out of these schools. That's no secret, I hope, at this point. And mm-hmm. I don't think that that's, you know, a conspiracy is a word that we use to say, you know, it's kind of like put it in the drawer with Elvis lives at Area 51 type stuff. But, you know, that's there are real conspiracies, and that certainly is one.
We've all gone through public school, most of us, right? I mean, we should all realize by now that that's pretty much what's going on.
So I really tried to turn a corner with my show at about episode 100. It's been somewhat successful. I wouldn't say I've done it perfectly, to make the show more useful. Like, I think I did a pretty good job of pointing out the problems. I think I've been pretty elaborate on that. But we did a series called Discovering Doublespeak, where we looked at some of the language that politicians and people in the mainstream media use to deceive people. And now we're starting to explore the topic of logic in a little bit more detail, looking at it as a science, which I think is something very important. And Osborne, you've said this several times on this show and when we were doing a Liberty Conspiracy together, that this is the number one thing that should be taught.
Absolutely. This is my favorite topic.
It's like a flashlight in the dark, right? I mean,
yeah. No, I tell you, the biggest eye opener I ever had was a course in symbolic logic that I took in college, reducing everything down to just symbols and showing how the different logical operators.
Are you talking about like logical relationship? Like if all A's are B and all B's are C, then all A's are C, like that kind of symbolic logic?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's would be syllogistic or Aristotelian logic. But yeah, anyway, that is very useful.
So I had a very short textbook. I mean, it was like Weyferthian. And and I like an idiot, I sold it back at the end of the semester because I wanted the $20 or whatever they gave me for it.
Yeah.
But I really wish I had that, because I would love to just give a copy of it to everyone I run across who, you know, talks like a dumbass.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be very useful. But I don't think a lot of... Now, John, you said you're a teacher. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and where?
I teach middle school music. I called in a couple weeks ago.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well... Then for tonight, I'm going to let you go, but feel free to give us a call next week. I hope that our little discussion there was helpful.
Thanks, John.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
No problem. This is School Sucks Live. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. My co-hosts tonight are Mandrick and Osborne, and we've gotten to none of our show prep. Not
Excellent.
One item. I think that that's great. I really appreciate how, you know, callers are calling in, that's what callers do, and getting involved in the show and bringing up their own questions. And we've really had, you know, this is the fourth time we've done this show, and it's really been very populated with callers.
Which is good, because you always send Jason and I these links. You're like, hey, check out this article. Hey, read this, read that. We don't ever do it.
Yeah, we've been trying to get to one article.
No, I mean, we don't actually do any prep.
Oh,
do all this prep and we're just like,
So Mandrick and Osborne would like to say thank you to the callers for covering for them that they don't do the work, their homework, you know, in between shows. So
when we start seeing some of that money, you know, I'm just saying.
But the great thing about this is that, you know, I have a podcast too. So if there's an item that I really want to get to, like the story dropping out was a great idea and how I wanted to tie it in with the story about the girl who's trying to work her way through school and is sometimes just too tired to, you know, get up and go to school in the morning. So sometimes she shows up after attendance. Judge throws her in jail for 24 hours to make an example out of her. I can just do a podcast on that.
Right.
That would be absolutely fine. And if you know about that story and you want to talk about it, you can call in. But one of the most important things that you need to know about this show is that after midnight, they say nothing good happens after midnight. And I would say that that's probably true. We do an after show, or we call it the After School Sucks Special.
I call it detention.
Mandrick calls it detention.
And I'm sticking to that.
Now, but I was saying, like, didn't you find after school specials to be empowering stories of courage when you were growing up?
And that's why I call our show detention.
Sally, the sister, you know, only has to rat on Timothy the brother, right? Because Timothy is going to smoke a joint and he's going to get mixed up with the wrong crowd. But if Sally tells on him, it prevents him from getting mixed up with this crowd and winding up at some kind of satanic ritual where right. he was actually going to be the sacrifice.
Right, because while they're playing Dungeons and Dragons. Those are
the kinds of people who smoke marijuana. And by Sally having the courage to rat Timmy out right. to the authorities and her parents, she saved him from a satanic sacrifice.
And then when the
after
dad,
school special.
And then when the dad walks in with the drugs and he opens the box, he's like, you know, who taught you how to do these things? You know, he's like, you.
I learned it by watching you. And then with a little star, the more you know.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, jeez. All right, let's go.
Osborne is lost.
Let's go back to the
phone. He's older than us. It was a TV thing.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air. Who's this?
Hey, this is Ed.
Hey, Ed.
Hey,
how you doing?
What's up, Ed?
Hey. How y'all doing?
Good, good. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I think Mandrick said it well to that question. You know, all you can do is deal with yourself and the people you're dealing with, you know, about the freedom issue. But and time, is, to quote Thomas Paine again, I use this quote all the time, time makes more converts than reason.
Time makes more converts than reason.
And every generation, I talk to Stephanie a lot about this, but every generation
Stephanie from
is
Port Therapy.
So much more peaceful, less homophobic, less racist. They get along a whole lot better. So that, and I agree with Thomas Paine. But also, I just want to mention you guys that I keep reading a lot about in the schools about meditation and relaxation. And it was some principal that up in the Northeast, I don't know if it's Massachusetts, somewhere, maybe y'all can find it and look it up. But he said he was so nervous in school and anxious. So now he's a principal of a school.
And he
and
encourages
his main
meditation.
Thing is total relaxation of the student.
Yeah, I think that that's interesting. It's something that I've tried in the past, and I found that it helped me. I got really good at it, and it can get pretty groovy when you know what you're doing, and you can do that deep pranayama breathing, and you can sense tingling sensations through your entire body. It's pretty wild stuff, and it's relaxing to the point where it can almost kind of get intense again. So I've tried it. I've gotten out of it because I usually like wind up listening to like, you know, Free Talk Live or the show we talked about all throughout the after show last week, this comedy show, Red Bar Radio, before I go to bed. But I used to put on meditation music and try that for like a half hour, 45 minutes. And I found it was a nice way to end the day. You know,
meditation has like this. Like when I hear meditation, I just start thinking religion in some way.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that. And no. I don't even really like the word spiritual because spiritual tends to.
I really don't like the word spiritual.
Right.
Yeah,
people think of religion when they hear the word spiritual. But, you know, I think that we do have a subconscious that we can tap into.
Okay.
And a lot of people felt like prayer, you know, people pray and they say, my prayers have been answered, uh-huh. you know? But I think that everything goes in through our consciousness, you know, like faster than we can process the information, you know, but it's kind of absorbed into the subconscious. And like when people say, I have a feeling that so-and-so is doing this, right? They've probably been sent subtle clues that there is a situation there, but they haven't registered consciously, but they're being, you know, embedded into the subconscious.
So
people call this intuition.
Would you say like maybe doing some introspection? Is that really what meditation is in a way? Or was it more just like shutting your... I don't know. I just couldn't imagine just sitting there and not really thinking. Like, that's just not...
I feel like I would be really bad at this.
Right.
Yeah. I'm
always like constantly just... My brain is nonstop.
I think that, you know, people...
That's what it's supposed to do.
Right.
It's supposed to slow your brain down. Well, and it just... But it is kind of... And Mandrick, you're kind of right about that from a lot that I've read. That it has got a lot of religious overtones, but what yeah. this is about is just relaxation.
But, right.
No
but I
spirituality
am
and religion and
well, hold on a second, because I just want to. I just want to comment on what you said about, you know, slowing your brain down. I am a pretty relaxed dude. I mean, you wouldn't really know it, I guess, from looking at me. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a lot of anxiety or anything, but I like that my brain is always on.
What this is for the children, you know, in the schools that are very uptight. Okay. As you know, the schools are kind of nerve-wracking anyway, the way run.
Yeah, sure.
And they don't get a lot of peace because in that environment, and you know, especially in the inner city where I think this is happening, they have all kinds of stressors that aren't even related to school, things that happen at home or maybe even on the way to school. If you look at maybe some of the neighborhoods they live in and then school.
Brett, that's exactly what I wanted to say next. Yeah. You know, Arne Duncan goes around saying, poverty is not destiny. You probably heard that, right?
Yeah, Arne Duncan, by the way, if you're unfamiliar, you're listening, is the Secretary of Education under Obama.
Okay.
Hey, but this teacher really got him. He brought up to it to him. He said, hey, you were on the Harvard basketball team during these certain years. He said you had a 7-17 record. Would you say you were persistently low achieving?
Well,
and what the point of this is, like, remember I called y'all, I think it was last week. If you got to deal with poverty. I mean, I know a lot of people don't have to, but the ones that do, like you just mentioned, Brett, they got with the school and then they got it at home.
Sure.
Like I've read stories where these kids get home and supposed to have food. Somebody else has eaten their food before they get back home. I mean, think about that. Did that ever happen to any of y'all?
No, I mean, I didn't. I had kind of a mixed upbringing. My father was an entrepreneur who was very successful, could have retired maybe when he was like 36. And, you know, he was just in the right place, the right time, had the right knowledge to get into this this chemical multicolor paint business, sold the company for millions of dollars, could have retired. I was 9 years old, thought he was a genius entrepreneur, invested in another company. It was bankrupt in 2 years. He wound up being investigated by the EPA for about 7, pretty much bankrupted my family. So I saw both sides of it. You know, I saw what it was like to be, I would say, upper class and what it was like to really struggle and watch have two parents who weren't too good at conflict resolution together trying to figure out financial problems. But Ed, good thoughts tonight. Thank you very much for the call, and feel free to give us a call anytime. This is School Sucks Live, 843. Join SSP. We still have time for your call. We'll be right back. We have one more segment.
Back to School Sucks Live. This is your host, Osborne, and with me tonight is Brett and Mandrake.
Well done.
We've only got one segment left, so if you want to get your call in, give us a call, 843-JOIN-SSP, or reach us on Skype at
School Sucks Live, all one word.
Thanks for the assist, Brett.
That was masterful.
High five, everybody. Hug. Woo! Yeah, I'm just kidding. Don't actually touch me.
Right now, we have a caller on the line, though, a lovely lady, Christina.
Yep.
Maybe we could find out what she has to say.
All our callers have been lovely tonight. I just want to add that.
It's been a great night filled with good callers. So, no, a good night filled with great callers.
There you go.
No, a great night filled with great callers.
And great co-hosts. Yeah. I love you guys.
Yeah, love you too.
I love you more.
And I'm going to tell you how much I love you.
All right, save it in 10 minutes. We can talk about that. All right, so Christina, you are on School Sucks Live with Brett, Mandrick, and Osborne. What's on your mind tonight?
Hi, and sorry, I'm both calling so many times. I thought I got the number wrong.
Oh, don't worry about it.
But, first of all, I just want to say thanks because I think what you guys are doing is great.
Thank you.
But, I recently dropped out of my high school.
Mm-hmm.
That's a peanut gallery.
Sorry.
What was the last thing you said? Sorry. After you said you said you dropped out of high school, I didn't hear the next thing that you said.
Like a couple months ago, I left mine.
Okay.
And I just think that.
Were you a senior?
What? I have a bad connection.
Okay. Were you a senior when you dropped out, or I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to figure out like what grade you were in.
I'm currently a junior.
You were okay.
Yeah. I have a really bad connection.
Okay. Well, if you have a question or something, you just want to get it out, we could always answer it.
Sure. You could take our answer off the air if you just had a question that you wanted to hear us throw around here for a few minutes.
Well, I can't really hear you guys that well.
Okay,
we'll let you go, but if you can improve your phone connection, you've got a few minutes to call us back, or you can try us next Thursday at 10 p.m., or you can email me, brett@edu-lu-tion.com, or find me on Facebook, and you know, if you wanted to have a conversation on my show, or you just had a question for me, don't hesitate to call me. Or contact me that way. And if there's anything I can do to help you, I certainly don't want to miss the opportunity to do that. But if you want to try us again next week, go ahead and do that. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I'd love to hear her story.
A shame.
I'd like
especially
to hear
all this talk we've had recently about the dropping out and whatnot.
These are the stories that we really want to hear.
Yeah, I kind of clap like off mic, like, yeah, you dropped out. But I mean, really, I guess it's like, I'd like to hear the story. I mean, because you're right, it's not. I don't know if it's the answer for everybody.
There is a whole story there that we would want to know more about.
Absolutely.
And, sometimes this is the best thing that a person can do. But, you know, depending on what their alternatives are, depending on why they're dropping out, obviously there's a lot of reasons why people leave school. We never got to the story about this girl who isn't going to drop out.
And we never will, apparently.
I'll deal with it on the podcast maybe. But she's trying to, you know, have an adult life. Help support her family by working a job at night.
I think she had two jobs.
Yeah, certainly. But being up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning and then still trying to go to school, right? So maybe for some people, it's just like, hey, I'm not getting anything out of school. And that wasn't even the case with her because she was saying in the clip I heard that she loved school.
And she's an honor student.
Yeah. Since we have a few minutes left, I'm going to go ahead and just play this clip. And then maybe we can talk a little bit about this in the after show, but there's a possibility that Jamie Crane might be coming on with us. So if you only listen to us on LRN.FM, what you're going to want to do after we end in a few minutes is you are going to, if you're into School Sucks, there's plenty of great LRN programming, but if you're really into this School Sucks thing that we have going on, go to schoolsucksproject.com/live, or you can just find the live button in the main nav bar on schoolsucksproject.com. Load up that video and you will see our After School Sucks special. It's an after show thing that we do after the regular show. We have this little decompression period. We get silly. We use the F word. We use the S word. We use D words and P words, and we have a great time. It's loose. It's fun. It's the kind of podcast that we want to do, but it's so purposeless that it's not a good use of our time.
We had very interesting topics last week.
It could be anything we want. It doesn't have to be about education, but if somebody's still listening and they have a serious issue that they want to deal with, we can deal with it there. It doesn't matter. That part of the show can be anything that we want it to be or anything that you want it to be.
We talk about cooking.
If you call in, yeah. We talk about cooking. We talk about some adult topics. It's a very interesting half hour to an hour, maybe hour and a half. Who knows? You never know what's going to happen. So that's the After School Sucks special. It happens at schoolsucksproject.com/live after midnight. So I'm just going to play this clip. This is from KHOU. I'm guessing that's a television station in Houston, Texas. And we're going to hear about what happened to this young girl, Diane Trant.
A Willis High School student is learning a tough lesson about skipping school, but it's because she's having a tough time.
She is. Sherry Williams is live in Conroe with the story that the student is telling us. Sherry?
Hey, Lynn and Greg. Yeah, her name is Diane Tran. She says she loves school. She hates missing school, but the problem is she's exhausted. She misses a lot of days, so last night she spent the night here in the Montgomery County Jail after the judge threw her in there for excessive truancy. Seventeen-year-old Diane Tran has a heavy load at Willis High.
Dual credit U.S. history, dual credit English history, college algebra, Spanish 3 AP.
And she has a heavy load in life since her parents divorced and moved away, leaving her to help provide for a brother at Texas A&M and a little sister with relatives in Houston.
I always thought our family was happy. So
they're just trying to make a living, and Diane got caught in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. After a judge warned her in April to stop missing so much school, Tran recently missed again. She works part-time at a wedding venue and full-time at a dry cleaner's.
And she goes from job to job, from school. She stays up till 7 o'clock in the morning doing her homework.
But the judge says the case is bigger than Tran.
A lot of people there, and if you let one of them run loose, what are you going to do with the rest of them? Let them go too? A little stay in a jail for one night is not death sentence.
We explained the particulars of Tran's situation to him.
So, Judge, do you think it's a case for a little bit of justice tempered with mercy?
Probably so, yes, ma'am.
Can anything be done to revoke this?
Yeah, it probably could.
Will you?
I haven't thought on that issue because it turns me, well, he's soft.
Kids are kids. And if, you know, if they're kind of by themselves, then, you know, help them. Don't harm them.
Now, frankly, our hearts go out to this 11th grade student, so we talked to that judge some more. He said he would think about Diane's Tran's case just a little bit more. If he does not, then she will have a record, and that concerns her mightily. Reporting live from Montgomery County, Sherry Williams, KHOU 11 News.
Okay, so this is interesting because what's happened since then is that people have gotten together. There's this website, change.org, which I'm guessing is more of a left-leaning thing. That has raised money and tried to raise awareness about this situation. I hope this doesn't result in some kind of call for more state action, but it tends to happen. So on a down note, we'll end the live show. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And please go to schoolsocksproject.com/live like in 2 minutes, and we are going to continue. I'm Brett. With me tonight has been
Mandrick.
And Osborne, and now I'm going to go shoot myself in the head.
Oh, my goodness. No. We're about to have a lot of fun, everybody. So go check us out on the video stream. We'll see you in a couple minutes. Thanks for listening, and take care.
Okay, because we ran out of time there, and we really didn't get to do a thorough investigation of this story, I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about it here. And this was a week ago that was recorded on May 31st, and there's been quite a few developments with the Diane Tran case since then as well. So I want to talk about that a little bit. But in the first hour of this show, the 531 show, we were talking about the origins of a voluntary society. And even though this is certainly, like we talked about on the show, a long-term project, another thing that needs to always be kept in mind is the obstacles to moving towards a freer world. What's in our way? And we've devoted plenty of time to that on the show, but this goes all the way back to the beginning of School Sucks podcast, and one of the biggest obstacles to a more just and more free world is the obedience of people who in many ways are just like you and me. Because most of what we would describe as, you know, the actions of the state are actually carried out by human beings making decisions, often poorly informed decisions, you know, panicky decisions. What happens to me if I don't do, you know, if I don't enforce the law? And you heard the judge say, well, I would be perceived as soft. So he's actually put into this place where he feels like he has to value other people's opinion of how hard or soft he is over, you know, the life and the livelihood of a teenager who's struggling to make ends meet for her family. So there's obedience in the enforcement, but more importantly, there is obedience in the acceptance of enforcement. You know, 9 times out of 10, I'm picking those numbers arbitrarily, but almost always, you know, people say, oh, that's the law, what can you do? But because of the media attention, and we are really not going to be able to rely on mainstream media, I think we all know this by now, to bring attention to important stories, in this case it seemed to work. And that started this snowball effect where a couple of news outlets picked this story up. A movement began very, very quickly. I shouldn't knock the movement for whatever political orientation they might have. You know, if they're working towards a positive end, that's with reference to change.org. They raised $100,000 for this girl in a period of like 10 days. The name of the website was Help Diane Tran. And in addition to raising that money, another action that people have taken is to put pressure on these public officials to reverse the decision. I mean, this girl, in addition to spending 24 hours in jail, was also supposed to receive an $1,000 fine. So that just kind of reveals, well, not that there needs to be any revelations here, but just how backward-ass the thinking is in the so-called justice system, where the judge looks at this situation, and I don't know if there's a prosecutor, I don't know if there's a DA involved in this or not. This was a contempt charge that she had been in court for truancy already, and apparently had made an agreement with the judge not to miss any more school. So when she missed school, that was contempt of court. And she's working two jobs, staying up pretty much all night to also do well in school, which is just like an obstacle to doing well in the real world. And considering that financial situation, the judge assuming, I mean, it's not like, oh, this will really help you. It's a punitive system. It only can deal in force and punishment. It says, oh, how about an $1,000 fine? That way there's a lesson, you know, a tough lesson to be learned. And it's not a death sentence, you know. It's just a night in jail and a $1,000 fine for a 17-year-old honor student. But then they will learn how important school is. Now, think about this. Think about how punitive these measures are. And this happens all the time. Maybe not to honor students, but this special case reveals something to us. That this girl can still perform in a very, beyond acceptable way, missing a significant amount of school. Now, she can do the same work as everybody else in less time. A highly valued skill in the real world, you know? Like if you had a job, let's say, where you were trying to meet quotas, right? So there aren't many jobs where it's an arrangement where it's 40 hours a week and if you have some kind of, spectacular talent that allows you to do all that work in 10 hours, most of those people are that highly motivated and determined would want to fill the other 30 hours a week with more work. But let's just say you had a job that functioned on a basis of quotas, maybe like in sales or something, and you valued your time more than earning potential. Well, I think a lot of employees would find somebody who could do, let's just, pick numbers again, kind of out of the air here, 40 hours worth a week for most people in 20 hours. I mean, that's desirable. But see, school isn't about that. School is about obedience. It's about showing up there and sacrificing, what you want to do what you're told. And if you decide that you have better things to do, regardless of your performance in school, well, that's a punishable offense. And just by obedience, I mean just, oh, well, that's the law. Oh, well, he's the judge. She did miss school. That kind of rationalizing thinking where people would just rather use their imagination to come up with reasons why all of the horrors that go on in this country and around the world are actually good and necessary instead of using their imagination to picture a world where it didn't have to be that way. That's obedience. But the counter to that was what we saw from people in this situation, people calling the judges, putting pressure, like I said, putting pressure on these public officials to say, hey, you are a human being, so you need to act like a human being. Not like a punishment bot or a threat bot, which is how we see most of these, law enforcement and justice system bureaucrats behaving. And it's deeper than just their obedience. I think a lot of the times these people are motivated to get into these kinds of positions of authority because it's instant respect. Oh, look at my robe. Look at my costume. Instant unearned fake respect, which is good enough for most of them. I would say it's a majority of people who seek these positions for those reasons. But it doesn't mean that these people are necessarily impermeable when it comes to others trying to point out the injustice of their decisions and actions. And that pressure, you know, that standing up to this kind of authority actually had a positive outcome in the story. And we've done this in New Hampshire a bunch because, you know, there's been times they brought this up on Free Talk Live when Pete and Adam Ademo from Liberty on Tour got arrested in Greenfield, Massachusetts. This was up on Facebook on this Pork 411, which is, you know, just this activism alert hotline. People, if they encounter a problem with some bureaucrat or the police, they call, they say, here's what's happening. If they get arrested, it's quickly discovered, like, where they're at, and the public pressure starts. It doesn't always have, you know, the desired outcome. But you can do this from anywhere in the country. You know, if you hear one of these stories happening, and I mean, you know, these people are getting a little bit better at shielding themselves, in many cases, from being susceptible to what the public does. But this kind of organization to bring attention to the actions of this judge. I mean, think about how many times this kind of thing happens around the country. And what makes this story special? That Diane is an honor student, right? So that gives her a higher priority than other people who might be working while in school to chip in or even support their family. So I think it's fortunate that this story had that aspect to it, which helped people, you know, feel how outraged people should feel all the time about, you know, how kids are forced to stay in these schools and what the consequences are for just choosing a different path in life. And she wasn't even doing that. You know, she was trying to do it all. I think some people are more realistic and they say, but yeah, I'm not getting anything out of school. School is not a meaningful, enriching, positive experience for me. So I'm going to go work. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the times people lack guidance and they leave school to do something that might even be worse than school. But and that happens a lot too. And, you know, I don't know if everyone would agree with this, but I have no problem interfering with the lives of these public people because they're public in two ways. Number one, their livelihood is funded by the threat of force. You know, the people that they are so often aggressing against, peaceful people who've objectively speaking done nothing wrong, those are the people who pay their salary. But they're also public people in the sense that they feel that they have some kind of privilege to meddle in the private lives of other people, to make the decisions of a 17-year-old girl a public matter. 17-year-old girl who's not only trying to succeed in school, but is also trying to, you know, be successful to some extent, even though right now this is just about making money, I think, more than, you know, having a satisfying career for Diane Tran. You know, that's her private life. Those are her decisions. Her family matters, her family situation, her parents getting divorced. Didn't even want to touch on that aspect of the story because this is a private person. And the judge made that public. So when these kinds of bureaucrats do this stuff, I have no objection to calling them on their home phone. In Keene, they did a candlelight vigil at the house in the front, the street in front of a judge's house. I think that's fantastic. Now, I know the public might say, whoa, you can't do that. But, you know, these people made themselves public people, not just because they rely on the public to support them, but also because they interfere in the private lives of other people. They say your business is a public matter. Now, I know a counterargument to all of this is, Brett, how many wrongs make a right? You know, But I think that accountability is far more important here. And if people just can continue to believe that they can do these things to people, they can aggress against peaceful people and then go home and enjoy a quiet, peaceful life of their own. They're not living a quiet, peaceful life already. Now, would I do these things? Is this the kind of activism that I'm interested in? No, not really. Because I think that the purpose of activism is to move public opinion. And this, like political participation, is an arena that is just extremely antagonistic. And ultimately what winds up happening, since there's plenty of antagonism and fantasies about aggression to spare, that antagonism and fantasies of aggression just get directed towards whatever your message is. It just becomes a target for what's already, you know, the norm. Put into this place where the expectation is that people will behave antagonistically towards one another. Politics, probably the best example. But when people see, you know, somebody else walking around outside of the cage, they don't say, oh, how, you know, that looks neat. They resent that person. And when these activists do these things in Keene or other places, there's a real strong sense of resentment in that community towards free staters, because they are forcing people to look at, you know, the problems that they don't want to face themselves. I think that that's a big part of it. Nobody who's involved politically looks at this system and says, perfect, nice. You know, so it's just this arena where aggression is permissible. It's cowboys and Indians for adults, two groups of people in politics anyway, who want to pretend to be a part of a group that has figured out how to use aggression towards some noble goal. There's nothing intellectual about this. There's no intellectual intervention that can be done in most cases. I'm not saying it's never possible. This is an emotional thing. And when you try to change people's beliefs and opinions in an arena that is already highly emotionally charged, I just don't think that would work. But my point is that there's no moral dilemma for me in confronting somebody who, you know, thought it was okay to interfere with the private lives of others while they have an expectation of their own private life, like punch out at 5 o'clock, and then I expect to be immune from the kind of treatment that is my MO, you know, as a judge, as a cop, as some kind of regulator that these bureaucrats are subjecting others to every day. And it's just considered acceptable. Just, oh, that's the law. These are the regulations. This is the fine that is issued when this violation or infraction occurs. And people just accept that, and they shouldn't. So I know that was kind of a rant, but my point is that I was really happy to see some social pressure come the way of this judge. Because these are like real signals about how acceptable your behavior is, right? Ostracism, this kind of social pressure, these signals are actually, real consequences, like people have to deal with in the market, you know, where they're trying to provide services voluntarily. So even though I have my own reasons for not participating in this kind of, you know, in-your-face social consequence activism, I think that it can be very effective if it is done strategically and used sparingly. Because ostracism is a very valuable tool, right? So we don't associate with you anymore because of your behavior, your decisions, your actions. Now, obviously, you can't do that with any kind of public official, with any kind of bureaucrat. You can, when a cop pulls you over, you can't say, well, you know, our last interaction was so negative, so we're not doing this, and roll up your window and drive away. You'll be shot. So this is what this judge received as far as this, you know, this public disapproval of his decision and how to deal with Diane Tran. I think is a good thing. So that might sound a little scattered. It might sound like I'm all over the place. But I'm not into a bunch of people surrounding a cop and chanting, shame, 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 especially in a situation that, like I said before, is already emotionally charged. You know, like if the cop has had some kind of altercation with somebody. That's not outreach or any political situation ever that I can think of. I mean, like, you could talk to people individually if you set it up the right way, if you know how to approach them, if you know what issues they care about, right? If they're liberal, then maybe you'd have a better in with them talking about these things, and conservative, maybe these things. Oh, but even that, you know, for me, has proven to be pretty fruitless, which is why I try to spend a majority of my time reaching out to people who are under 30 years old, preferably under 20 years old, because as you'll hear in an upcoming show, we're going to be talking about college. College has a set of different problems. When people graduate from high school, they know that intellectually, as far as their whole lifelong learning experience is concerned, they are unfinished. There's a lot more for them to figure out, which makes sense because I think a lot of people graduate from high school feeling like, wow, what was that? I don't know anything. But after a couple of years of college, when people are exposed to these, you know-it-all professors who write the textbooks that they hand out, that changes. Somebody comes home from their freshman year, their sophomore year, they're studying economics, they're studying philosophy, history, psychology, and suddenly you're adult, and they'll tell you how the world works. Now, that doesn't happen to everybody all the time. It might not even happen, you know, most of the time. But I've dealt with people on the show in real life who thought, like, maybe not necessarily that you're an idiot, but like, well, you know, you should really read the textbook that the professor wrote. Then you'll understand why we need the state to do this or that. So, wow, I just talked for 20 minutes and I still haven't accomplished the primary goal of this monologue, which is just an update on the story. And the, like I said, charges have been dropped. You know, after the night in jail, there are no charges. Nothing will appear on this record. She will not get the $1,000 fine. But the judge has also issued, I'm not going to call this an apology. This is from the HoustonPress.com blog. And the story is called Diane Tran's Judge Offers a Defense, sorta. So the author of this piece is Richard Connolly. And I'm going to skip the first few paragraphs because it's all just information that we've covered already. But then about four short paragraphs down, it says, the judge has issued a statement in which he refuses to discuss the details of the Tran case, but says he'll continue to fight truancy because apparently people were demanding that he stop doing that. Now, when you hear the statement, I'm going to read it. You can tell that it is motivated by nothing else besides you know, public pressure. This was not the result of some soul searching that he did after, you know, his decision in this case. I think it's evident in the statement that this is just a cover your ass kind of thing, even though it might not ultimately do that, because the most recent development is that apparently this judge has also been investigated for various ethics violation, mostly related to campaigning to be elected judge in this precinct where he serves. But this Tran case, I think, has triggered more scrutiny that might want. And now, you know, an ethics investigation done by the government, you know, for what it's worth, whatever. But it's interesting that this history is there. And I think it's, you know, a good thing for you to know before we hear from him. Since I was elected Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace in 2003, I have remained focused on serving the public to the best of my ability, listening to each case before me with an open mind, and making an informed, just, and legal decision. As a father and someone with over three decades of experience in law enforcement, I came to this office not only with a love for young people, but an acute awareness of the dangers they face in society and a genuine determination to provide whatever guidance or assistance might be necessary to guide them on the path toward a successful future. While I will not address the specifics of Ms. Tran's case, I will say my intent is and always has been to make sure that students in my precinct take full advantage of their opportunity to earn a high school diploma. according to state law. Let me pause right there. For the judge, for the bureaucrat, for the cop, that little phrase right there. Oh, it happens so quick, we can miss it if we're not paying close attention, word by word. So commonplace. It is the destroyer of all moral arguments. According to state law. According to state law, regardless of how high a student's grades may be, if they have too many unexcused absences, they will not receive credit for their classes. When a student who has already been to court and been court-ordered to attend school each day continues to have unexcused absences, additional steps must be taken to enforce the law that is meant to ensure they complete their high school education. I want the best quality of life possible for all residents of Precinct 1, and I want our children to have the brightest futures they are capable of achieving. I will continue to hold students and sometimes parents accountable for unexcused absences as we work to reduce truancy, lower the dropout rate, and, oh, here comes the big finish, instill in tomorrow's leaders the belief that rules and laws must be followed by all for society to properly function. I'm doing it for the children. Guy sounds like he ran for something a couple of times.